The Will Cain Show podcast is presented by the Capital One Saver Card. Earn 4% cash back on dining and entertainment, 2% at grocery stores, and 1% on all other purchases.
This is the Will Cain Podcast on ESPN Radio.
Student athletes have narrowly escaped death row. The concept of the student athlete, the non-revenue generating sports, for now got a reprieve. But it's not over. And if there is to be such a thing as the student athlete, you're going to have to fight for your sport. It's the Will Cain Show on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, SiriusXM Channel 80, and on ESPN News, presented by Progressive Insurance. And you can join the conversation at 888-729-3776. It is a subject near and dear to my heart, but I'm going to lay out for you exactly the racket of colleges threatening to cut non-revenue generating sports because times are tough. That's coming up in just a moment here on the Will Cain Show. But Bob in Indiana wants to get in on the Packers and Aaron Rodgers. What's up, Bob?
What's going on, Will? Hey, I got to say, as a Packer fan living through the Brett Favre era, I think everyone's thinking about this. The Packers are playing checkers, but I think they're actually playing chess, because the Packers have one thing that everyone else doesn't have, which is no owner, no single owner. There's no Jerry Jones to be the villain in this story. And when Brett Favre left, he became the villain. I just don't see the Packers losing in this, because either Rodgers stays, they win our Super Bowl, life's grand, or he throws a fit, leaves town, and becomes the villain. And I think people, it's just easy in Green Bay because we are all owners. You know, I'm a shareholder. There's millions of us. We're not going to be the villain. It's just easy for Rodgers to become the villain and for the Packers management to not be the villain in this.
Let me ask you a question, Bob. You're a minority shareholder. Everybody's a minority shareholder. But you're a shareholder in the Packers. You're a fan. I'm just curious about this. And I know we have listeners. I think we're carried in Wisconsin. What is your relationship with Aaron Rodgers? Like, I hear, when I just hear you describing that, well, it's okay. He'll be the villain if he decides to leave. I hear less than devotion. You know, I don't hear this idea of we've got the most talented quarterback of all time who's won us a Super Bowl, and why the heck would we threaten that relationship? I hear, let the chips fall where they may.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of what I'm feeling like, because sometimes it's just he's not Brett Favre. I guess I grew up in the Brett Favre era. I'm older now, I'm at 30, so when I was younger, Brett Favre was a legend, and Aaron Rodgers is a legend, but there's that kind of feeling the Brady-esque breakup is coming. I guess I've always felt for the last couple of years that breakup is coming. And so to me, this kind of made sense because I see it coming. No one saw the Brett Favre breakup coming, but we're all kind of, I think, preparing as Packer fans for that breakup. And if that breakup happens, like with Brett Favre, he will become the villain, and then he'll come home again. Brett Favre came back and is no longer the villain. And I think that's what's going to happen with Rodgers. I think he's going to want out. He'll become the villain. And 10 years from now, he'll come back home to Green Bay and be a hero again. And the Packers management doesn't look bad in that, because they don't have a single point owner like Jerry Jones, where we can all point our finger and go, you messed up, because we're all minority owners. So
I know,
we're not going to blame ourselves
for
this.
Okay, I appreciate the call, Bob. I hear you. But here's my thing. Your analysis is all about perception. Who gets painted as the good guy and who gets painted as the bad guy. And it's also all about you, like how you feel. And I'm not telling you you're wrong on that, but what I am is a little bit taken aback. Because what I think a fan mostly cares about is winning. Like, are we winning, and are we winning Super Bowls? And then also tied to that is some concept of loyalty. I'll speak to you through my prism. You know I'm a Dallas Cowboy fan. I want Jerry Jones to put the Dallas Cowboys to win Super Bowls in a position to win those as many times as possible. And I also love that Tony Romo was devoted to being a Dallas Cowboy. That kind of loyalty gets returned. What I think is fascinating is what Jordan Love's drafting did is put the Aaron Rodgers era on a clock, and I'm not sure that clock lines up with Aaron Rodgers' ability to win Super Bowls. In other words, I think he's got 2-3 definitely prime years of competing left, and maybe more. And the Packers just said, yeah, but that's about it, and we're ready to move on. And to me, that and the sentiment I'm hearing right there, this transactional perception PR-based relationship, just makes it feel like you both compromise some ability to win and cut this sense of loyalty. I'm just a little surprised at that perspective coming with a Packers fan, because the thing that's carried you for over a decade now is about to come to an end. And it feels like a little prematurely for a wild card of a quarterback prospect. That, I mean, let's be real. That's what Jordan Love is, a wild card of a quarterback prospect. This is far from a sure thing. So you compromise loyalty and ability to win for a shot that you have a seamless quarterback transition. I'm going to go through a couple of scenarios. How about that? Coming up a little bit later on the Will Cain Show, I'll ask you. I'll give you two scenarios on how the Packers could handle this situation, and we'll play sliding doors. Which door do you want to go through? That'll come up a little bit later here on the Will Cain Show. Friday, I got a call. I talked to a buddy of mine who's involved in NCAA sports. He said, you realize the NCAA is considering to give a waiver to Division I schools for cutting non-revenue generating programs. There's certain things you have to do in order to remain Division I. I can't remember how many programs it is. I think it's 16. It could be more. You gotta maintain 16 programs. You gotta have, I think, a minimum, I can't remember how, 30,000 people at home football games. You gotta play a certain number of games. There's criteria that you have to check to remain Division I. Well, the commissioners of the Group of Five and then almost every other conference in the country asked the NCAA for a waiver, a blanket waiver, that in these hard times of the coronavirus, they could begin to cut programs and remain Division I. Late Friday night, the NCAA denied that blanket request for a waiver. But the NCAA said they would analyze it on a case-by-case basis. So, if a school, let's just pick one out of a hat, UCF, University of Central Florida, says we can't afford to keep all these programs in the coronavirus. Our athletic department's getting hit. If we don't have football, the money's going to get tight. We need to cut men's tennis. We need to cut women's gymnastics. We need to start cutting women's volleyball programs in order to survive. NCAA, will you allow us to remain Division I? If we do that, the Division I NCAA commissioners can, governing body can grant that on a case-by-case basis. Now, here's what I would say to you. A couple of points. Number one, I'm biased. I think the key to objectivity is being honest about your bias. I played a non-revenue generating sport at a Division I school. I played water polo at Pepperdine. I also was a scrub, but that's a story for another day. But I played that sport. So I have, and I was an Olympic sport participant all through my life. I swam when I was a kid. I did all of those sports. So I have a love in my heart for those kinds of sports that are not ones that end up with professional contracts and a career choice. You're doing it for other reasons than to turn out a lucrative career choice. Number two, I actually think that is what the student athlete is. 1% or less, it's much less, I think, then 1% of college athletes end up turning pro, even in revenue generating sports like basketball and football. The vast, vast majority of people playing college sports are doing it for other reasons. Number three, it is the feeder system to the Olympics. It is the reason the United States, that and the United States population is basically dominating the Olympics for years. And I take a certain amount of pride in that. I know not everybody loves the Olympics. I don't even think all the guys on the show like the Olympics. I do. And I love that the USA dominates the Olympics. Number four, this is not, I cannot believe, the place where you go about saving money. I see colleges with massive endowments. I believe Harvard's endowment is $40 billion. I see colleges with massive facilities and getting bigger and newer and shinier every year. I see colleges with tuition rates jacking up through the roof for decades, decades, far outpacing the rate of inflation. College is a racket that costs so much money. And you're going to tell me, when the going gets tough, the way to save money is to cut men's tennis? I just have trouble buying that all of a sudden the problem is we can't afford a 12-man tennis team or whatever it may be. That the $40 billion endowment, the $12 billion endowment, the alumni donations, the jacking rates of tuition weren't able to cover this period. Perhaps if that's the case, there should have been some better money management over those years to save for a rainy day. Because if you're burning up your $40 billion at a rate that you are always on the line of black and red, you might bring in some better money managers. Number, I don't know what number I'm on. 5, 6, I don't know. This is what campus life is about. This isn't revenue generating sports. I love college football. Love college football. Tied with professional football for my favorite sport. But this is campus life. This is the definition of a student athlete. This is the marriage of athletics and academics. This is what the whole concept is about. Why you have four-year institutions. Why you shape well-rounded individuals. This is the whole idea of college. And if at this point what we're saying is all we can afford is to keep the revenue generating sports, then the people that say you start paying college athletes have a point to make. Because if that's all it's about, maybe then they aren't student athletes. And the first thing to go is the concept of the student athlete. Colleges have been flush in cash. Whether or not they are on a year-to-year basis, that's up to your money manager, and perhaps you need to take a long look in the mirror about it. Colleges are supposed to be about the student athlete. Colleges are supposed to be about more than the revenue-generating sports. Colleges are supposed to be about more than churning out pro athletes. Colleges are supposed to be about churning out well-rounded individuals with leadership and resilience traits capable of moving on to professional careers and things outside of athletics, and athletics helps fund that. And if the NCAA or individual institutions think now's the time to cut back on that, well, maybe you should be handling your business when times are good much, much differently. That's just my thoughts. I'm going to bring in Alexi Lalas, who was a college athlete at a non-revenue generating sport, at least in America, college soccer, a little bit later on the Will Cain Show to discuss this. A little bit earlier, though, I told you my colleague said the Cowboys are not just only not a favorite in the NFC, but not even a favorite in the NFC East. Dominique Foxworth's going to jump on and debate me on that next in the Will Cain Show.
Capital One knows life doesn't alert you about your credit card. That's why we created Eno, the Capital One assistant that looks out for surprise credit card charges like overtipping, duplicate charges, or potential fraud, then sends an alert to your phone and helps if you need to fix them. Another way Capital One is watching out for your money when you're not. Capital One, what's in your wallet? See CapitalOne.com for details.
Though we're apart these days, we're sharing more. So at GEICO, we'd like to say thanks. Thanks for sharing your savage dance moves. Thanks for sharing your DIY haircut fails. Thanks for sharing your inner lip sync star. Now it's our turn to share with the GEICO Give Back, a 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies for current and new customers. Because we're committed for the long haul, the 15% credit lasts your full policy term. Visit geico.com/giveback for more info and eligibility.
Chicago Bulls mindset, it wasn't going to be any tougher. Nothing was going to be tougher than knocking off the bad boy Detroit Pistons.
The most hated team ever is the bad boy Pistons. They're hated.
You're never going to find a character like Dennis Rodman in any sport in this day and age.
Look, my liver hurt just watching the Rodman part on the 48-hour excursion to Vegas.
Dennis Rodman is absolutely insane. He's off his rocker.
Jordan had to go across the street to drag him out of his apartment to get him into the practice.
Hey, yesterday I said that Jordan went into Vegas and pulled Rodman out of bed with Carmen Electra. I think that could have been wrong. I saw, Mike A., I'm going to have you get on this. Carmen Electra was on Spain & Company last night. Let's get some of that sound. I want to hear what Carmen Electra said. It's the Will Cain Show on ESPN Radio, presented by Progressive Insurance. Dominique Foxworth of the Undefeated and Get Up and Highly Questionable and Around the Horn and everything on ESPN is on my phone lines. What's up, Dominique?
What's happening? How you been?
So I told the guys to ask if you could hang out for two because I got a couple things I want to talk to you about. And they said, you said, I'll try, but I'm at the park with my kids.
Yeah, we're not at the park. We got a there's like a creek not too far from our house. So we're just finding new activities to burn this time. So we're just walking around. My son really likes wildlife. So he's just looking for newts and crayfish and stuff.
Crayfish, that's a very Maryland thing to say. The other day, So here's the thing. I tweeted this out. My kids went down to the creek. It's a little stream down from where I'm staying as well. And one of the neighbors saw them, and they were down by themselves. And the neighbor said to them, what are you boys doing? And they told the neighbor, we're down here picking these mini lobsters up out of the creek. And of course, they're born and raised now in New York City. And I was mortified. I was like, mini lobsters? What are you talking about? And I put that out on social media and I said, crawdads. And then people came back and were like, crawdads, it's crawfish. And other people like crayfish. And I think you're part of the country. You grew up there too, right? So
yeah, I grew up in Baltimore.
It's crayfish. I think people say that there.
Yeah, no, it's crayfish. I mean, I played college football, so it was a bunch of people from everywhere. So we actually had a teammate whose name was Crawdad. So he's from Louisiana and had a thick accent, so we just called him Crawdad.
Yeah, we said Crawdad growing up. We said crawfish too, but Crawdad when we were kids for sure. Dominique Foxworth here on the Will Cain Show. I'm going to try to keep you as long as I can. If you get a mini lobster, then we're just going to have to deal with that on air. You tweeted something this week, and I believe you tweeted something last week as well that caught my attention, both times. So this week you tweeted while watching The Last Dance that, say what you will about Jerry Krause, but he made some bold moves, and they were almost all correct. I liked your tweet. I immediately thought it was correct. But before we get onto that, didn't you tweet a week ago, I can't wait to see who tries to defend Jerry Krause or something like that? Or was that somebody else who tweeted that?
No, same person. Yeah,
it was you. Okay.
So, I mean, I can only go off of the episode. They sure framed Jerry Krause up. And I can defend the stuff that he did before. It wasn't very personal, but it was like strategically, like it made sense. You won six championships and these guys were at the end of their rope. It's time. It's the old Belichick thing. You get rid of everybody a year before rather than a year late. You just normally don't have the opportunity to do it coming off of six championships in 8 years. So like there is a defense for that. It's an awful defense, but there's a defense for it. And if you look at like the Phil Jackson thing, like that is the key to their championship run. And totally. Who was looking for Phil Jackson coaching in the Dominican? Oh no, was he in Puerto Rico? Like
Puerto Rico.
Then he was in Albany. Like nobody was looking for Phil Jackson. Somehow he picked him out, and he thought he was the man. And that you can't have Dennis Rodman, you can't have Jordan, you can't have all that stuff. The triangle offense, like that was all made possible because of Phil Jackson. So those are some impressive moves.
So a week ago when you tweet out, I can't wait to see who tries to defend Jerry Krause, I'm thinking, well, that's probably going to be me. And so, because, by the way, you are almost as bad as me when it comes to contrarian stuff. But here was my thought a week ago, okay? It was all too easy. Like, it was painting Jerry Krause as a villain, and it was too simplistic. And I'm like, there's no way it's that easy. There's no way that he was just an egomaniacal moron who wanted to do away with six championships. Okay, there's got to be more to the story. I just didn't like the simplicity of him being a villain. It just raised my antennas. But I didn't really have a defense other than that until we get to this week's two episodes where you now are saying something that I also agree with, like, he made bold move after bold move. It wasn't just what you talked about of hiring Phil Jackson. It was firing Doug Collins and putting Phil in charge. It was embracing Tex Winter in the triangle offense. You pointed that out. It was trading for Scottie Pippen. I mean, make no mistake, Jerry Krause was the architect of that dynasty.
He built a dynasty. I mean, at least the second half of the dynasty, the second three when Rodman was there. Like, there's first player is obviously Michael Jordan. The second two players were from nowhere schools. Like, not that they didn't already know that Dennis Rodman was good, but, like, that requires some skill and understanding, you know, you can put all that stuff together. I know Rodman was already a champion and he had proven it, but who thinks to put Dennis Rodman, who's wilding out in San Antonio, next to the greatest player in NBA history? Like, that's a brave move. And I think the assistant GM was the one who, like, pushed him to do it, but he had to pull the trigger.
You know, and there's some people, and I won't go this far now, there are some people that are saying even the move at the end to start to break up the dynasty was the right move. They were like, this thing was coming to an end, they were all in their late 30s, and you need to start thinking about what's next. And I don't know if that's true or not, because then that's a debate about whether or not you ride it out for another championship, a seventh, right? Do you try to reboot it?
I think you've got to ride it out. I think the real problem was wanting to move on from Phil Jackson. Because I think you could have kept Michael. You could have moved on from Scottie and Dennis maybe and built something around Michael. You don't send the greatest player in history away. So, I mean, I think that on paper, part of the problem with all of us becoming fantasy football and basketball owners is, like, we all think we know what we're talking about and we play these video games. This is essentially what they are. And the players you draft don't have feelings. But being a leader, being a manager, like, it's so much about the interpersonal skills. And I'm not sure that he was great at that part, which I think is a failing. And so many of us, when we're talking about moving players and trade, we just talk about them like they're cogs. And they have to work together, have to live together. And all that stuff is difficult if you're just treating them like they're assets.
Yeah, and you are a guy who, I mean, like, you love the nuance. And I think I'm almost 100% you're going to agree with this. Jerry Krause can be all those things. He can be a genius architect who made all those right calls. He can also be a guy that feels like he never got the credit. Those guys were jerks to him, by the way. And I'm not putting it on them, but that was on camera. Always making fun of his height and all that stuff. And he could, just like every other dynasty from the Cowboys to the Patriots to whatever, he could have fallen to the same trap that everybody does, which is ego. Ego kills it in the end. And that wouldn't be surprising at all for him to be all of those things, right?
That's one of the tough things about a documentary or anytime you're trying to tell a real life story is stories and movies have to be simplified, and you boil things down and make people like heroes and villains because that's how we tell stories and it's easier that way. But I also felt like coming off of last weekend's two shows that Isaiah Thomas got the raw end of it. Like, that was a minor thing. Walking off and not shaking hands, like, that's a minor transgression. And the way they treated him and the way most people are responding to it was like how Isaiah was wrong. And somehow you can't forgive Isaiah, who didn't shake your hand and maybe iced you out of the All-Star game. You can't forgive him, but you'll play for Chuck Daly, who was the coach who said, hey, who put together the game plan that essentially was like, try to hurt these guys. And you can go and sign or trade for Dennis Rodman, who pushed Scottie Pippen into the stands and tried to kill him. Like, he was trying to injure him. And I don't understand why walking off the court seems like a minor thing to me. And everyone was like, no, he deserved it. Zeke was a jerk.
All right. Like, will you hang out? Can we try to do this for one more segment?
Yeah.
Okay, good. Because I have a response to that. I actually disagree with you a little bit on the Isaiah thing. Plus, I want to get to your statement this morning that the Cowboys are not the favorites in the NFC East. I have an issue with that, as you can imagine. Dominique Foxworth is coming up on the Will Cain Show. Tune into The Last Dance, a behind-the-scenes look at the 90 Chicago Bulls dynasty. The series continues this Sunday at 9 p.m. Eastern Time on ESPN. Listen to the wrap-up podcast hosted by Jalen Jacoby immediately following the broadcast, presented by State Farm and AT&T. Available wherever you enjoy your podcast. More with Dominique Foxworth on Isaiah Thomas and his contention that it's the Eagles who are the favorite in the NFC East. That's next on the Will Cain Show.
Though we're apart these days, we're sharing more. So at Geico, we'd like to say thanks. Thanks for sharing your savage dance moves. Thanks for sharing your DIY haircut fails. Thanks for sharing your inner lip sync star. Now it's our turn to share with the Geico Give Back, a 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies for current and new customers. Because we're committed for the long haul, the 15% credit lasts your full policy term. Visit geico.com/giveback for more info and eligibility.
Still hanging out with Dominique Foxworth of The Undefeated here on the Will Cain Show on ESPN Radio, presented by Progressive Insurance. Before we left for break, Dominique and I both agreed that Jerry Krause was prematurely simplified as a villain in the Last Dance documentary. And the last two episodes seem to show more nuance, more layers to the whole story, including the fact that Jerry Krause made all the tough calls to build that dynasty. And then we started talking about the way that Isaiah Thomas is now taking the brunt of it after episodes 3 and 4. Dominique, you said you thought it was a relatively minor sin to walk off the court without shaking hands, and certainly one that shouldn't put him into the villain spotlight this week. Here's the thing. I don't think it is minor. Like, I think you should, and I think the Detroit Pistons certainly failed in sportsmanship in shaking hands after they lost to the Chicago Bulls. I thought it was a weak move, okay? I thought I hate this analysis, but it was a really bad look for them. I also cannot believe it was the source of a grudge for Michael Jordan that has lasted 20, 30 years, whatever it's been. 30 years. I can't believe he's held on to that for that long.
I would certainly prefer if they shook hands, but honestly, I don't really care that much. Like, no one's, I think if we're going to complain about conduct, I would complain, as I mentioned before the break, I would complain more about people trying to push people into the stands and trying to injure people and doing this like violent foul stuff. Like, that actually bothers me. If you don't want to touch me, you don't want to speak to me, fine. My feelings ain't hurt. I'm grown. I'll move on. But if you're trying to hurt me, that's a different story.
Yeah. I mean, if you're ranking them, I agree. They forgave Rodman and welcomed Rodman into the Bulls fold. And I do hate for, I've gotten to know Isaiah a little bit. I don't know that I can say I know anybody, or you for that matter, can say we know most people we interact with professionally very deeply, right? But I like Isaiah in all my interactions with him. I've really liked Isaiah. And I hate that if that is the reason he was held off the Dream Team for him, that's the price he had to pay. I think he made a mistake, but that's a big price to pay for that mistake, I would say.
Yeah, that's my only point, is that it seemed like it was minor, and it's something. And I think Stephen A. said that he talked to Michael Jordan last night, and Jordan said that he doesn't feel this way about Isaiah now, even though it came off that way. He said he was just kind of channeling his feelings from that time, but it sure seemed like he still hadn't forgiven him. He was still kind of angry with him, right? Like, that's the
thing. It was all in the eyes, Dominique. I don't care what he said. Yeah. It was all in the eyes.
Yeah. I mean, we agree with that it was not, I mean, I understand him being upset about it, but if it's that, if you're that upset, then the next time you see him, bring it up. And, like, that's something I feel like as competitors, like, you forgive a lot more than that over the course of time. But I'm shocked like you. But Michael Jordan's not like us. You and I are not the greatest of all time at anything that we've done. And if it requires being a maniacal kind of unforgiving person, then I guess that's what it requires. I don't have that in me.
Dominique Foxworth of The Undefeated here on The Will Cain Show. Okay, so you said this morning that the Cowboys only got better on offense, and I believe you agreed with Ryan Clark. They're not only not a favorite in the NFC, they're not even a favorite in the NFC East. Is that right? Is that what you said?
Yeah. Yeah, that is what I said. I stand by it.
Oh, man. I guess I'll make my case. I don't need to make the offensive case for you. I think you pointed out. Number one offense in the NFL, added CeeDee Lamb. It can only get better, right? I do think
well,
it means
actually,
they should.
It can't get better. It can't get better than number one. I mean, if you want to be technical, but proceed.
What? Were they number one in scoring as well or just yards? I can't remember.
They were like three in passing efficiency, I think, and like four in total efficiency. But, I mean, it's not likely to get much better than that.
Well, even I would say it wasn't. It was unevenly distributed. How about that? There was a lot of yards and points against the Dolphins, and not so many against the better teams. So, I think CeeDee Lamb will help that. I think Mike McCarthy is actually the bigger addition that can help that as well. I don't think they're as bad. You're the defensive back, okay? I don't think they're as bad as everybody's making them out. I mean, Dan Orlovsky called the secondary doo doo on ESPN.
Yeah, that was a stretch.
I agree. Like, it's not one of the best defensive backfields in the NFL, but I don't think it's terrible. I think Awuzie and Lewis and Brown and now Diggs and Robinson, that's all right. That's an all right defensive backfield. If they can get any pressure on the quarterback, and if they get Alden Smith and Randy Gregory back, I think they will get pressure on the quarterback. They're going to have plenty of opportunity to go after the other team's offense if they're trying to score 30 to keep up with the Cowboys.
Okay, well, I mean, I think if they get Alden Smith back, like, what Alden Smith do you expect? I think if Alden Smith can play at his peak performance, then we're looking at an entirely different defense. But the problem for me with going in, and this is preseason projections, going in is, like, the improvement you could say is they got better at coach, maybe. I don't think that Mike McCarthy is some game changer of a coach. Maybe he's better than Jason Garrett, but I don't think it's, like, a huge difference. They lost Robert Quinn, who was their most effective pass rusher last year, even if he's not necessarily their best pass rusher. They lost Byron Jones, who was their best corner, obviously, on a defense that was already pretty bad. So it's hard for me to look at this team and say that CeeDee Lamb is going to make their offense marginally better. Their offense is already pretty great. So if they can repeat the offensive performance they had last year, I love that. That's great. But they need to get better on defense. And their defense did not get better from a skill standpoint. So I don't know. Mike Nolan, maybe his addition is going to change their defense. So it's just hard for me to project all these what ifs based on what
I got a better one.
Eagles last year. Okay,
I got a better one. Okay, they added John Fossil and Greg Zuerlein, and they lost like three games by like 4 points, 3 points, and they had a kicker that missed 10 kicks. Okay, 10. That's a big thing. So upgrading kickers is a big deal.
They lost Travis Frederick too. Like that's a problem. It's hard for me to come in and. All right, if you're reaching for John Fossil right now, I know I got you.
I am. And I don't think it's a reach.
If what you're saying is John Fossil is going to be the difference maker, I know I got you. So, I mean, I don't think they're a bad team. I was high on them last year. I want them to succeed. You know how I feel about Dak. Like, I want them to be great. But I also try not to lie to myself. And if I had to put something that I cared about on it, especially off the last time we saw the Eagles and the Cowboys go head-to-head, like, it's hard for me to come out of this and think that the Cowboys are better than the Eagles when the Eagles beat them with a skeleton crew, essentially.
Mm. You must really like the Jalen Hurts pick. I'll tell you what, I put a lot on
it. Oh, I hate that pick.
Why? Tell us real quick. Why do you hate it so much?
Because Jalen Hurts' best attribute requires you to take your best player off the field. Like, I like the Taysom Hill stuff down in New Orleans because Drew Brees is limited at this point. But your best player, Carson Wentz, you can't take him off the field. Like, get more help. You've lost opportunities to get more help. Jalen Hurts is not going to make that big of an impact in my mind. And I don't know if you're going to try to implement him in other situations where he doesn't have to play quarterback, but I just don't like it. It seems like a risky pick to me. And if you think that he's a quality backup quarterback, like, okay, but I feel like your season's over once your starting quarterback gets hurt if you're worried about protection from injury, so. At number
what do you
two,
hate?
Like, if you get Jalen Hurts at fourth or fifth round, that's one thing. But you got him in the second round. That is a lot to pay for a guy that you're hoping can turn into a player who will take your best player off the field. Like, it doesn't make sense to me.
I 100% agree. But really quickly, what do you hate more, Hurts to the Eagles or Love to the Packers?
Hurts to the Eagles, maybe. Yeah. I mean, Love to the Packers, I can justify because Aaron Rodgers hasn't been very good lately. Like, I don't love that move, but I really should think they should have gone with a tackle at that spot to replace Bulaga and then gotten a receiver later in the draft. I think what's more egregious by the Packers is less taking Love, but I understand how they're wasting his rookie deal by also paying Aaron Rodgers. But more egregious is at no point getting a receiver. Like, it's the deepest receiver draft ever. You need receivers. How you could get Love and not get a receiver at any point, like, that is the most egregious part.
I like how you said that. That's been my point today. Wasting Jordan Love's rookie deal while paying Aaron Rodgers. It just doesn't line up. The timing is off. We agreed on most stuff today. It's Dominique Foxworth of The Undefeated. All right, man. Hope you caught a newt or a crawfish.
All right, brother.
All right. See you, man. Let's play a game of sliding doors next. The Green Bay Packers, if they could choose between the last 3 years of the New England Patriots, but a completely bare cupboard at quarterback, or a seamless transition to the next guy, which door would you walk through? That's coming up on the Will Cain Show on ESPN Radio and the ESPN app.
Foot odor throwing you off your game? Stick to a winning game plan with Odor Eaters, featuring three advanced odor and wetness fighters. The lineup provides long-lasting odor control plus more to keep your feet on their game.
Odor Eaters powder provides outstanding moisture control. Clear drying spray is the MVP in preventing athlete's foot, while insoles work continuously to manage wetness while adding a layer of comfort. Pick up today at Walmart, Target, CVS, Dollar General, or other fine retailers.
Odor Eaters. Destroy foot odor with the best in odor defense.
Let's get an update on the per capita high school football players from each state to make it to the NFL. We'll settle the debate. What's the best state for producing NFL players? It's the Will Cain Show on ESPN Radio, and today on ESPN Daily, with Utah State quarterback Jordan Love now a Green Bay Packer, is there a shorter clock on Aaron Rodgers' time at Lambeau Field? Hear more on potential quarterback controversies in Green Bay. That's ESPN Daily. Listen, subscribe wherever you get your podcast. Tevin in Illinois, what's up, man? You're on the Will Cain Show.
Yeah, hey, Will. Thanks for taking my call, man. So I'm an Eagles fan. I just wanted to try to justify this Jalen Hurts pick really quickly. I myself was confused and almost threw my phone when I first saw the pick. Did not understand what we were doing. But after sitting out on the weekend, I guess the only real way to justify it is Doug Peterson has a statue out front of Lincoln Financial based off of the Philly special. We won a Super Bowl 2 years based in large part to his willingness to be risky and go for it on fourth down and his offensive ingenuity. And because of that, and only because of that, I think that it's understandable because we can see Doug Peterson scheming things up and being able to use him and get the most out of Jalen Hurts, you know. That's my only way to justify it.
So let's distill that really quickly, Tevin. You're justifying it by saying Doug Peterson knows how to use backup quarterbacks and trick play guys.
Not just that. I'm saying he knows how to – his play calling is forward-thinking. His ability to go for it on fourth down when most coaches wouldn't. Fourth and goal in the Super Bowl, he's calling a Philly special when most coaches wouldn't even dare to do that. I can only imagine what he's going to – what he can scheme up around Jalen Hurts.
I'm not trying to be a judge. I'm not dismissing you. What does that have to do with Jalen Hurts? I mean, seriously, like, that shows he's a gutsy play caller. What does that have to do with drafting a backup quarterback?
Well, I'm saying using him in other roles other than a backup quarterback. You can justify drafting a backup quarterback. I don't know, maybe not that high, but given Carson Wentz's history, I don't think anybody can debate the fact that we need to have a solid backup quarterback on the team, and that's coming from an Eagles fan.
No, that's so right. That's right. Just, the question is, do you spend that on a second-round pick? That's the debate.
No, I agree. No, yeah, I agree. But I guess the ability to have a great backup quarterback and the ability to scheme and use him in pivotal areas in the game on fourth down, on fourth and goal, when the other, you know, we didn't have that ability last year is all I'm saying.
Okay. I got it. I appreciate the call, Tevin. I think this is what you're saying. So we've had all the reasons laid out. I think what you're doing is you're kind of making a composite of it all. You're saying, well, okay, we get a little bit of gadget player. We get a little bit of our aggressive play caller that knows how to use the gadget player, maybe like Sean Payton does. Plus, we get a better backup quarterback, which means, you know, with Carson Wentz's history, we're probably going to end up using him. And when you add all that stuff up together, it's worth drafting a backup quarterback in the second round. You did the buffet approach. You said, I'll take a little bit of all of it. And that's cool. I mean, that might be the answer. But I don't know that it's an answer that fully overcomes the biggest issue people have with it, which is you spent a second round pick on all of that. And I'll tell you this, none of those things individually is worth a second round pick. If you add it all together, is that worth a second round pick? I don't know that it still adds up to that. I want to play this Green Bay Packers sliding door game. I'll tell you what, I'm going to give it to you. You load up the phone lines and you let me tell which door you would walk through. And then I'll lay it out later because I don't have time right now. Here's the sliding door question for you, okay? The Green Bay Packers also drafted a quarterback. This time in the first round, they traded up for him. What they seem to be trying to do is prepare themselves for the post-Aaron Rodgers era. A seamless transition. A transition at the least, if it's not seamless. Similar to how they went from Brett Favre to Aaron Rodgers. And then Aaron Rodgers to Jordan Love. The sacrifice in that transition is your ability to win in the short term. So you have not given Aaron Rodgers the weapons, not maximized your window. You've put a time clock on the window, and you're not maximizing it. So let's call it 2 to 3 years. Okay, so what you've done is trade your maximum ability to win championships for your seamless transition. That's door number one you can walk through, okay? Which the Packers just have. The other door you can walk through, door number two, is the one that the Patriots did over the last 3 years. Okay, they got rid of Garoppolo, so the heir apparent. We know the politics behind that. But they rode Tom Brady to 2 Super Bowls and 1 Super Bowl championship. At the end of that 3 years, their cupboard is bare. Maybe or maybe not Jarrett Stidham works out. But what they got for that was 2 Super Bowl appearances and 1 Super Bowl championship. Which door do you walk through? Bare cupboard at the end of the experiment, but the results that the Patriots got, or seamless transition? In best case scenario, you got another quarterback for the next decade. 888-729-3776. Bubba, do you have the update on per capita football players from states?
I sure do. Straight from the NFL, most recent data, number one, Alabama.
So Nuno was fake news.
This is
straight from the NFL.
Sad. It's just sad.
It is sad. And
he's pandering to the guest.
I know. I mean, we expect more from our Supreme Leader. There's plenty of fake news out there. It's not going to be here. Let's go deeper than one next.
Thank you for listening to the Will Cain Podcast. You can listen to the Will Cain Show live weekdays at 3 Eastern on ESPN Radio and on the ESPN app. The Will Cain Podcast.